This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. It's 2:46 Central Time, 83 degrees in Urbana. My name is Celeste Quinn. Thanks so much for tuning in today. Well, imagine this. Imagine being a child and seeing your parents murdered by a man mad with hate, your mother raped before being killed. You see him tried, the murderer tried and sentenced to death. Years go by, you're a man. And the person you saw kill your parents has been set free by DNA evidence. He's free. You are not. You are haunted. My guest in this portion of the program has imagined this. It is how his novel, River Ghosts, begins. My guest is Bruce Steinberg, who has written River Ghosts under the name B.R. Robb. Let me share a little bit more about the story with you. The witness to the murders of his parents is protagonist Richard Hill. He is the son of a black father and a white mother. The neo-Nazi youth convicted of the murders, now free, is Henry Clayton, a man who claims to have been reborn. River Ghosts, published by Thompson Gale, has received a number of very positive reviews, including a starred review by Kirkus, whose reviewer compared B.R. Robb's gifts as a writer to those of Alice Siebold. Bruce Steinberg is a former prosecutor, now a criminal defense lawyer, an alumnus of the University of Illinois. He and his family make their home in St. Charles, Illinois. In addition to River Ghosts, he is the author of The Widow's Son, also written under the name B.R. Robb. Bruce Steinberg, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Celeste, and good afternoon.
Well, racial hatred is the motive for the crime. Richard Hill, our protagonist, became a police officer, he explains, not because of the murders, but because he wouldn't be hassled by police as a black man. What inspired you to write a novel that probes the issue of race?
That is a huge question. I remember as a child growing up in my enclave of Skokie, where the whole world was white and Jewish, wondering when the Archie Bunker types of the world would fade away. And I had a naive notion that that would happen as people became more enlightened over time. Yet, although institutional segregation, racism has fallen mostly to the side, it is perpetuated. As I grew into my teenage years, I experienced anti-Semitism. Unfortunately, I had some of the same experiences when I was in Champaign. And as a lawyer, I've had to represent people with swastikas emblazoned to their skin. Mm. And at the same time, the world and my surroundings were full of examples of wonderful people, of eclectic people, people who don't share any of these sort of hatreds, but will ask questions and will enjoy the differences. It was born out of frustration that it still continues. I think in the mystery genre, there hasn't been a character like this before, a biracial man dealing with contemporary issues of racial prejudice. And, you know, I also wanted to write from the point of view of someone who I am not, although I think I was incorrect, because as I would sit there typing as this middle-aged white Jewish man through the eyes of a biracial young man having witnessed this tragic event, I saw that the similarities far outweighed the differences. The experiences I had growing up, the good and the bad, my brother and my sister having lost our father, being witness to it at a young age, coping with that, not knowing what happened, only learning later what happened, it came pouring through. And in real life, as in this book, although its negatives are there, it does have the positive aspects of human nature.
Yeah. It is Richard Hill's point of view. What was it like finding his voice and running with it?
I was a little worried, quite frankly. I am fortunate to have many friends of different backgrounds, and I wonder what they would think. I have some good friends who are African American, and the debate over the use of the N-word, for example, was ripe. And I held my fingers over that keyboard, wondering how I could type it and how I could not type it if I were going to be true to the story. And I would think of watching, for example, Schindler's List, and knowing that I wasn't expecting the Germans, Nazis, to refer to Jewish people in any friendly way. I know that The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn in the 1840s, they were not referring to African-American slaves as African-Americans, and I wanted to be real, and I took a chance. Others will have to decide if it worked. It was risky, but so far the reactions have been extremely positive, and I am somewhat relieved. I know there are people out there that will never accept such language, but I hope the majority will find that it was used in a realistic and positive way.
Hmm. What are your feelings about Henry Clayton, and how do you go about creating a villain?
Well, you draw on what you see. Henry Clayton, I've seen truly remarkable things with religious leaders. The notion, he's described as someone who always smiles but never thinks he's funny, never thinks anything's funny. He's on the pedestal, yet he has all these things going on in his private life to preach the good game but not live it. We see this all the time in the politics, people who put themselves on the pedestal only to be knocked down. I've seen it in the court system. And I once asked a man, okay, I'm a young boy, I'm a Jewish boy, and I've just seen my father die, and I am facing my bar mitzvah, which is exactly what position my brother was in. How in the world do I believe in God? Mm. And the rabbi said, he let out a big oi, a big droning oi, big question. He said, if I knew God, I would be God. The joy is in the journey, not pretending that you know. And it's allowing us to discover our own path and not allowing the people of Henry Clayton to preach the rest of us, but to allow our own experiences. That frustration, that experience, that came out in Henry Clayton very much.
River Ghosts also deals with the science of DNA evidence, and we know you're an attorney. Have you seen questions raised about how DNA evidence is collected and analyzed? And
well, absolutely. I studied the science even before I began writing this book, and I studied it again for this book. I chose to back off the technicalities about it. I talked with prosecutors, defense attorneys about the mistakes that could be made. And ironically, as this book was gearing up for publication, there was a case, I believe, out of New York where what happened in the book happened in real life. I don't want to give away.
No, don't do that.
Don't want to give away what happened. But there was a character named Auntie Doria, who is the anchor for Richard Hill. And she describes DNA as the artistry of God in the hands of man. And so you know that there's always trouble afoot if something that presumes perfection is in the hands of man. And that is something that does appear in real life and can be imagined without too much work.
Hmm. Is there any one part of the process of writing fiction that you most enjoy?
Every author loves finishing that first draft. But what I really enjoy, when I am writing, I just plow ahead. When I sense that there are mistakes or additions to be made, my computer begins to fill with yellow post-it notes all over the place. My wife really doesn't want to look at the office at that point. But I love the first rewrite is the most enjoyable, to be able to flesh out things that I may have overlooked, things that I would have been disappointed in, regretting had I not gone back. And also, I like a book that doesn't have typos in it myself. So out of respect for the reader, I write and I clean and I clean. Because that's what I like to read. I like to read a book where I can see that the author has a great deal of respect for the reading audience.
Yeah. I wonder, we only have a minute left here now, but I'm sorry to say, but I wonder when you do that first when you go back and read that first draft, if there are things that pop up to you that you go, well, that's a surprising choice I made there.
But if I go back now and read it?
No, when you went, either you know, the first draft, or you know, when you read it now, or when you see it, you know, in galley form.
Yes. You know, when I read it now, writing is a magical process. I get up very early, 4 a.m. to write, and sometimes when I'm looking back at it now, I can't believe I wrote this. that I was in this state of mind. And, you know, it's not anything about a swelled head, but it's a satisfaction. And so the things that you said at the beginning of this interview, an immense satisfaction, the best satisfaction that a reader says the book was worth his or her while to read it, and that is amazing. To say that I amaze myself once in a while is sometimes qualified. Did I write that? but with River Ghost, I'm very satisfied with how it turned out.
Yeah. There we have to leave it. We're out of time, I'm sorry to say. Bruce Steinberg, thank you so much for talking with me this afternoon.
Thank you, Celeste, and I appreciate all you said.
Bruce Steinberg, who is the author of River Ghost, has written the book under the name B.R. Robb. So look for River Ghosts, written by B.R. Robb. The book is published by Thompson Gale.